Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. 10 people are killed in an intercommunal clashes in Warab State.
Attack in our community, killing 8 people.
This morning alone, 8 people were killed at the Noi site and 1 person at Ajak section, making total to 9 and 6 others injured both sides.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in Tonj State say 10 people were killed and 6 others wounded in an intercommunal fighting between 2 communities in Warab Town on Wednesday. The Secretary General of the former Tonj State described the situation as unpredictable, saying he expects clashes to get out of hand. For VOA News, Daniel Marine Wek reports from Juba.
Gabriel Awan Makwoch, the former Secretary General of defunct Tonj State, says 10 people were killed and 6 others injured during intercommunal fighting between 2 groups over cattle. Makwoch says the attackers are believed to be a group of young men from the Lair area who attacked the Noi community near Warab Town.
Attack the Noi community, killing 8 people.
This morning alone, 8 people were killed at the Noi site and 1 person at Ajak section, making total to 9 and 6 others injured both sides. Many people have been displaced and seek refuge in Gogriel East County and nearby bushes. The situation is unfriendly, and we could not tell you what is going to happen soon or tomorrow.
Makwoch says tensions are still high in the area, and confrontation between the 2 communities is likely to resume if there is no intervention to keep the 2 groups apart. John Gabriel Deng, the Toi North County Police Director, says a team sent to assess the area found 9 bodies.
9 people were killed near the town of Warab and 5 people were wounded. I was informed now another 2 people are still missing. The whole population of the area is displaced to Gogriel East and the rest went toward Wau. The tension is unprecedented and we could not tell you how tomorrow will be. We are trying to deploy some forces between the borders, but the place is bushy for our soldiers to move there.
Warab State Governor Bona Fanagbiar says a total of 10 people were killed in the fighting.
10 are killed, 9 on the side of Noi and 1. Most of the children and women who ran to the town. Town is already, is under protection of the forces, so Umar there. But what we are trying now is actually protect the people who are coming to town.
This is not the first time these communities have clashed. Between May and October, series of clashes left dozens of people killed and cattle were raided in many places. Chapter 2 of the Ribat Last Peace Agreement requires signatories to offer maximum protection of civilians at all times to ensure the safety and dignity of individuals and communities. The agreement also states there shall be a nationwide disarmament of the armed civil population during the transitional period. Despite the signed peace deal, intercommunal conflicts are common in the 3 counties of Tonj South, Tonj East and Tonj North since the beginning of 2020. The government of South Sudan sent a disarmament force to the area to collect guns in August. At least 81 people were killed when armed young men attacked the disarmament force. For VOA News, Daniel Marengwek in Juba.
The South Sudan Police Service say more than 20 young men and women were injured during a peace concert in Juba over the weekend. The spokesperson of the South Sudan Police Service says some of the wounded have been admitted at Juba Teaching Hospital. The director of the hospital declined to speak about the conditions of the young men and women admitted at his facility. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Thousands of people gathered at the Dr. John Gereng Mausoleum to see Tanzanian's Bongo superstar artist, commonly known as Diamond Platnumz, performance over the weekend. South Sudan National Police Service spokesperson, Major General Daniel Justin, says part of the crowd decided to climb on a platform erected for media personnel. He says the structure could not hold the weight of all the people and collapsed. He says most of the injured were taken to the hospital for treatment.
That stage was overcrowded with these small guys because the media were not many. So as a result, the stage broke, and as a result, many children got injured, and they were escorted to hospital for treatment. No death reported. Most of the injuries were slight. Some fall on their colleagues, and as a result, they were injured.
South Sudan in Focus contacted the administrator of Juba Teaching Hospital for comment on the situation of the children who were transported to the hospital for treatment, demanding that VOA submit a written request for interview. An eyewitness who prefer anonymity for fear of reprisals from the government collapsed, injuring more people.
We just arrived like this, almost two steps to reach where we were sitting, and then the thing fell over. Those ones who were up at least were safe, although some of them got some broken parts and all that. But the ones who were down, mostly kids and the rest, they were the ones who were badly injured. Blood was filled, others fainted, you know. It was really bad.
Justin says even though it was a private event, police were deployed to the venue to protect civilians.
It was a private, but our presence was there because we know that many people will come to the museum, and first of all, they were saying that a singer from Tanzania called Diamond will be there. So we make our precautions because we expect the attendance to be very big. So our forces were on the ground there.
Justin's appeals to the general public to take care of their children and stop them from moving around the streets of Juba, especially during the festive season. He says there are groups of young boys who are moving around the street, terrorizing people with axes.
They are to pay attention to their children as to where they are going and where they are coming from. Because even if the child is innocent, he is not part of these niggers, he will be under threat also from them. They used to fight.
Justin says the security situation in the country has been calm, with only few traffic incidents that happened on Christmas. He says the police have recorded two deaths during the Christmas festive season. He is appealing to citizens to report any forms of criminal activity to nearby police.
We had some incidences here and there. The first one was the 25th night in Kodoro area. Some of these youngsters, they were having a party, and in the party, they fought themselves, and as a result, one of these boys, a boy at the age of 22 years, was killed. Also on the 26th night, we had a disco place here in Buluk, whereby also around 2:30 in the night, somebody got shot. But because we have deployed some forces there, we managed to apprehend the suspect, and is now being investigated.
Health experts in South Sudan criticize organizers of the Concert for Peace for violating COVID-19 protocols. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres has offered a message of hope and healing for the new year to the hundreds of millions of people worldwide whose lives have been shattered by the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UN Chief Guterres does not hide his sorrow at the difficulties engendered by this once-in-a-century pandemic. COVID-19, he says, has upended the lives of millions, plunging the world into suffering and grief. He describes 2020 as a year of trials, tragedies, and tears, a year that continues to create havoc and claim new victims as COVID-19 rages on. The pandemic, he says, has increased poverty, inequality, and hunger to new heights.
But the new year lies ahead, and with it we see rays of hope. People extending a helping hand to neighbors and strangers, frontline workers giving their all, scientists developing vaccines in record time, countries making new commitments to prevent climate catastrophe.
Guterres says climate change and the pandemic are crises not easily overcome. He says it will take enormous work, commitment, and above all, a willingness of all people to work together for the same goal.
If we work together in unity and solidarity, these rays of hope can reach around the world. That's the lesson of this most difficult year. Together, let's make peace among ourselves and with nature, tackle the climate crisis, stop the spread of COVID-19, and make 2021 a year of healing.
Guterres says 2021 can be a year of healing divisions that were made worse from the deadly infection and broken economies if people work together. He says the best New Year's resolution for 2021 is to heal the planet. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, a patient in U.S. with a new strain of COVID-19 has tested positive. That story is coming up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best advice you have ever gotten?
Got an advice from my mom. She encouraged me to work hard. That she told me, and a very successful woman is a very hardworking woman.
The great one I can remember is the one my father gave to me to study hard. Actually, he was on his, I can say, maybe a deathbed. He was so ill. He had a stroke and he was so helpless. He couldn't do anything for me. That was the last day I even saw him. He was like, my son, study hard.
Is from my father. He has always told me that I shouldn't be afraid to learn new things and to take up new challenges, because he said that you're only afraid to take up new challenges when you haven't tried it.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. A case of COVID-19 variant that has been reported overseas has now been detected here in U.S. in the state of Colorado. AFP correspondent Jackie Quinin reports.
Colorado's governor says the patient is a man in his 20s with no history of travel. He's currently in isolation southeast of Denver, and the Federal Centers for Disease Control has been notified. Public health officials are investigating other potential cases and performing contact tracing to determine the spread of the variant throughout the state. British scientists believe this new virus variant is more contagious than previously identified strains, but the vaccines that are being developed are thought to be effective against this variant as well. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Still on COVID, South Africa has been taken aback to lockdown level 3 as the government battles the second wave of coronavirus infections being driven by a new variant. The new restrictions that have already kicked in have seen beaches and parks shut to the public. The sale of alcohol has been suspended while not wearing a mask now attracts a jail sentence. For VOA News, Thuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The new COVID-19 variant driving the second wave of infections in South Africa has given the government and citizens no peace. More than 50,000 new infections have been recorded since Christmas Eve, forcing President Cyril Ramaphosa to impose new tough restrictions.
We want to decrease unsafe interactions between people. We want to decrease the burden on healthcare services so that resources can be directed to meet the needs of COVID-19 and other patients. These are the key reasons.
According to the new restrictions, all indoor and outdoor gatherings have been banned with the exception of funerals. A new curfew has been imposed from 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. in the morning. Shops, restaurants, bars and cultural venues have been ordered to close their doors at 8 p.m. Not all South Africans agree with the new rules. Pumla Hamla is one of them.
I, for one, I don't see any need because it's affecting us, especially us who are having our businesses, like dealing with events and whatsoever, who are depending on them to feed us. It's really going to affect us.
Others like Tony Manyangadze are in support of the restrictions.
I think the move was rather too late. You should have done that way before Christmas, honestly, because the virus doesn't move on its own. It requires people to move it from one place to another. So sometimes I think we need to sacrifice a bit in order to gain a lot.
The sale of alcohol has been banned for both on-site and off-site consumption. The government argues that alcohol consumption leads to injuries that fill the scarce hospital beds. But the country's main opposition, Democratic Alliance Party leader John Steenhuisen, wants the government to concentrate more on purchasing the vaccine than crafting restrictions.
Hospitality industry, tourism industry, the liquor industry are all big employers in South Africa. Many people have poured their life savings into building these businesses up. And at the stroke of a pen last night, essentially, they were significantly curtailed.
Johannesburg and Pretoria are among 22 places that have been declared coronavirus hotspots. Barely a month after they were opened, beaches, recreational dams, lakes and public parks have been closed. Anyone found not wearing a mask in public could end up paying a fine or going to prison. The government has defended the restrictions, saying the infections were rapidly increasing and hospital beds quickly filling up. The total number of people infected so far has surpassed 1 million, while deaths are approaching the 27,000 mark. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Journalists in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, walked out of a news conference Monday after a top military officer accused them of being political activists. Tensions were running high ahead of the event after three journalists were allegedly attacked and injured by security forces while covering an opposition political rally Sunday. For VOA News, Alima Thomani reports from Kampala.
On Sunday night, journalists received a text message inviting them to a Monday morning press conference with the chief of Uganda's Defense Forces, General David Muhoozi. However, upon arrival, the 30 journalists who had come in were addressed instead by the political commissar for the Uganda People's Defense Forces, Brigadier General Henry Matsiko. After speaking about the upcoming 40th anniversary of the UPDF, Matsiko was asked why journalists are being targeted. Three journalists, including Ali Mivule of NTV Uganda and Ashraf Kasiri of Ghetto TV, were hit with tear gas canisters and rubber bullets by security forces on Sunday in the Masaka district. Kasiri was badly hurt and had to be put in a medically induced coma. The journalists were covering a campaign appearance by Bobby Wine, presidential candidate of the opposition National Unity Platform Party. Matsiko lectured the journalists, accusing them of being unprofessional and taking sides in the presidential campaign.
Even listening to some of you, the way you are presenting yourselves, I get an impression that you are moving into a different terrain of activism. And activism has its own dynamics. So once you are a journalist, prove to us that you are exercising professionalism. I have already regretted, and I'm saying, let us all, please.
Why don't you arrest me? Why do you shoot me?
We need to be fair and treat you
this time. Yes, I know, I understand.
The comments caused an uproar, and journalists walked out of the news conference. Michael Kakumiro, a photojournalist with the Daily Monitor newspaper, who says he has previously been beaten by security forces, demanded that Matsiko apologize.
He came and he started lecturing us as if we were politicians. We are not politicians. What we owe from security is an apology, and that has to come from the CDF himself.
The journalists are also demanding that top security officers issue a statement warning junior officers to allow journalists work in safety. They also want Enoch Abaine, the officer who shot at Mivule and commanded the operation Sunday in Masaka, to be arrested, tried, and penalized. Abubakar Boa, another Daily Monitor photojournalist, says their actions are in solidarity with their hospitalized colleagues.
What hurts us? Some of us have been covering state functions. But the moment you cover the opposition, then you become a bad journalist. The moment you cover the ruling government, then you are a very good journalist. So what should we do in this country? We love our country, but we can't work under such conditions.
After walking out of the media center, journalists were surrounded by security forces that included 15 police motorcycles, a police pickup truck, local defense unit officers armed with AK-47 rifles, and a police holding van. When asked why army officials had asked for reinforcement, UPDF spokesperson Brigadier General Flavia Biekwaso said the deployment was a mistake.
So these guys thought that actually we are under a problem. That's why they came as a rescue team. And you saw me coming out to tell them that no, there was no problem. Yes. Yes.
We are going to use our cameras.
Journalists insist they will only resume covering security functions once they get an apology from the proper officials. Uganda votes for a new president on January 14. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
From Kampala, we move to Nairobi, where Kenya plans to open primary and secondary schools next week. The Teachers Association says the learning institutions are not prepared well to admit students and follow health protocols to fight the spread of coronavirus. The schools insist they will need more teachers and funds to implement COVID-19 health guidelines. Public schools are also preparing for an influx of students from private schools. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Some 16 million Kenyan children are expected to begin classes Monday after being out of school for nearly 10 months due to COVID-19 pandemic. Nicholas Gathemia is a chairman of Kenya Primary Schools Head Teachers Association. He says schools will find it difficult to follow health protocols meant to fight the coronavirus.
The facilities we have are not adequate. They are inadequate to maintain the issue of social distance. We need about 3 or even 4 times the number of classes that we have. And right now we are facing challenges with the grade 4 and grade 8. And I think if the rest of the schools come back, it will be a big, big, big challenge.
In October, Kenya reopened schools for students in grade 4, 8 and 12. The students in those grades are preparing for final exams. With a limited number of students, schools were able to spread out the classes to keep learners safe from the virus. Inspecting schools in Kisumu County Monday, Education Minister George Magoha said the government would disperse $190 million to schools to make sure learning continues after a 10-month closure due to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Please use the money for the purposes for which it is meant. This is not the time for anything else. We shall follow by doing due diligence. In the past, we allowed everybody just to spend money without due diligence. Starting January 2021, that shall be our policy.
However, Gathema says the $40 million being given to primary schools is not enough.
That's the normal competition that is even inadequate, has always been inadequate to maintain a school. For example, in a primary school, you just get, in annual, you get about 608 per child of the whole year. And when you talk of 50%, it means that you might get 300 shillings this year, about three at this term. And that 300 will be for the supported staff. It will be for all that work is needed in school. It is actually very, very true.
Kenyan schools will be required to do more, provide clean water for washing hands, hand sanitizers and face masks to keep children safe in the learning institutions. Tomkins Baraza is a high school teacher and comments on education issues. He says opening schools provide both opportunities and a challenge for students.
We shall have very few indiscipline cases. Indiscipline cases will reduce, i.e. drug abuse, pregnancies, as many of them, of the learners will be in schools where we have rules and regulations and a lot of guidance and counseling from teachers. Then the teachers will also have a great challenge whereby they'll be dealing with many learners. And you might find that some of those learners might come with this pandemic to school and spread to others.
Since the partial reopening of schools in October, 35 schools have reported positive coronavirus cases and at least two teachers died of the virus. Mohamed Yusu for VA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Musa Juma and his song, Sudan Mpya.
Viva New Sudan!
Acholi konda sande kinupi, shiluku konda madiki tinka lukutu, kanyanyali da Joseph Lakobo, generali Joseph Lakobo. Lukutu Agnes tiyo matek sana Malpino Olivia tiyo matek sana Anyanyo kedo malich sana Afrika Anyanyalita Joseph Lako.
We have been listening to Musa Juma with his song Sudan Mpya. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, And wear a mask if you are in public places. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Salva e kirtio matek sana.